Opening and closing theme is by Midnight Syndicate. For more dark instrumental music like it, visit www.midnightsyndicate.com or find them on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or Alexa.
True crime stories are discussed in this podcast, which may contain graphic and disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Freshly Brewed Noir. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Summer.
And this is episode 54, The Westin Hotel Murders.
We just got off of episode 53. It was really intense, so this is still bad, but not as graphic, I don't think.
Yeah. Summer saw I was a little emotional towards the end.
Yeah.
So.
I don't blame you, though.
Now we're on a different one, and I'm not emotionally, like, invested in this one, so.
I think you'll be okay. And we got done with all of our business pretty much in the last episode.
We tend to do that, right? We tend to, like, do all the business in one and then.
Because we record two in a day, so yeah, we should have saved some up for this one. But you know what? If you want to hear it, listen to episode 52. I'm sorry, listen to episode 53.
Don't direct them to the wrong one.
No, then. I mean, listen to 52 as well.
Yeah.
Because that was a good one.
Yeah. So, thanks for covering another local story.
Taking us back to Atlanta.
And is this a recent case or is this pretty old?
I'm also going to cover some strange deaths that happened in the Westin. Some of those are more recent, but the murders I'm actually covering, like the first one was from the 90s.
Oh, all right.
It's been a minute since I've done these notes, so I'll have to confirm through my notes.
Okay. We'll all remember together.
Yes. So should we just dive in?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. So some of you Atlantans will be familiar with 210 Peachtree Street Northwest in downtown Atlanta, because that's where the Westin Peachtree Plaza stands. And it was designed by John Portman and Associates. It opened on February 27th, 1976 as the Peachtree Plaza. It stands at 723 feet tall from ground to roof. 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 And 883 feet tall from ground to antenna. So it's a big damn building.
Yeah, one of the taller ones in the city, right? Is it the tallest?
For 11 years, it was the tallest building in Atlanta until it was surpassed by One Atlantic Center. But there's 73 floors, 1,068 rooms, 40 suites, 4 restaurants, and 80,000 square feet of meeting space.
Damn.
Yeah, it's massive.
I've never been in it. I've seen it. I've never been inside. But I imagine it's fancy.
It's super fancy. Let me tell you about some of the other titles that it held that are notable. It was the tallest building in downtown Atlanta for 13 years, and this is until 191 Peachtree Tower passed it up. It was also the tallest hotel in the world for a year, until the Detroit Plaza Hotel that was built in 1977 passed it. In addition, it was the tallest building in the southeast of the United States until 1983, when the Southeast Financial Center in Miami took that title. And it still has more floors than any other building in not just Atlanta, but in the entire state of Georgia.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. Currently, it is the 4th tallest hotel in the Western Hemisphere and the 30th tallest all-hotel building in the world. In 81, there was a rebranding, and it is now known as the Westin Peachtree Plaza. It has 5,600 glass windows on the outside that reflect the view of downtown Atlanta, and it's shaped like a cylinder. So it's very recognizable. There's a smaller cylinder on the inside of the building, which runs the entire height of the hotel. And it has 2 elevators with views as you go up or down. And a lot of Atlantans know this. The Sundial restaurant is at the top of the building, and it slowly rotates so that you get a 360-degree view of the city, or at least it used to. I read online that the rotation feature was currently not available. I kind of wondered why it wasn't working, thinking like it had something to do with COVID. But then, I don't know if you remember this, I do remember this in the news, that there was a little boy, 5-year-old Charlie Holt. He actually died in April of 2017 from injuries in the restaurant from the rotation feature. So Charlie was at the restaurant with his parents who were visiting from North Carolina. Charlie got his head stuck between the table and the wall while it was rotating.
Oh my God.
When the parents noticed he was stuck, they told the staff and security quickly flipped the automatic shutoff switch so it would stop rotating, but it was too late. The damage it caused to his head ended up taking his life about an hour later at Grady Hospital. Such a horrific, tragic death. It's not even related to the murders that we're going to discuss, but it was the death in the hotel, so it should be mentioned.
I do remember it, actually, because the Sundial is actually a well-known restaurant, and
in Atlanta.
It's known to be fancy, and you go there for that specific reason because of the rotation. But I do remember hearing that that stopped because of that
tragic Charlie's death. There was some talk, I remember at the time, about the parents weren't watching him or something like that. But they were. They were walking. They were actually exiting the Sundial restaurant. And Charlie was literally just standing beside his parents when it happened. Like, it wasn't like he had run off somewhere or anything like that. So
he literally just got caught in
in the rotation. Yes.
That's so dangerous. Yeah. Like,
so
for it to be that easy for someone to get caught in the middle of.
Right. And maybe because he was a small child, they should have
maybe not allowed children up there or like
something. Right.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention that because it did happen at the Westin. Another death that I wanted to tell you about, Carolyn Mangum Robinson. She was an employee who died after becoming locked inside a walk-in freezer in March of 2016. The hotel was fined just $12,471 for exposing an employee to entrapment hazards and failing to ensure the exit door remained unobstructed. There's no foul play that was suspected in Carolyn's death, according to the police. She was 61 years old. A video showed her walking into the lower level kitchen the previous night. There supposedly was an exit mechanism, a button that she could press to get out if the door shut on her. And it appeared that she had tried to use it, but it wasn't working properly.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and that is why she couldn't get out and what led to the fine from OSHA. So they say that she spent 13 hours in the freezer. But get this, the autopsy report listed the cause of death as undetermined.
Undetermined? That's strange.
Wouldn't there be a cause of death if they determined she was frozen?
Yeah.
Her head, I guess, was frozen solid when they found her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, she died from exposure, like extreme temperatures, right?
Hypothermia or something? Is that what that's called?
So I thought that was strange, but I don't have any more information on that. But to me, that would be strange that they wouldn't have some type of cause of death if it was on video that she walked into the freezer.
And it was just not working,
the mechanism wasn't
button.
Working. Yep.
Wow, that's such a huge liability, especially if you have people going in and out of this freezer.
And I guess two people had gotten stuck in it. I don't remember if it was previously or afterwards, but two people had gotten stuck in it as well. They were able to get out, but it sounded like that mechanism that's supposed to open the door, the emergency one, didn't work, and people had complained about it.
Yeah, that'd be a huge complaint. I probably wouldn't even go in there anymore.
Right.
You can't make me go in there because there's no guarantee that anyone is, that I'm going to get out. I guess it's kind of weird how there was 13 hours where nobody else went into that walk-in freezer.
Nobody. But I think she was on a night shift, so it was later. It wasn't during
normal
business hours. She went in at 8 p.m. And you would think, if you have an employee working in the kitchen, you know they're going to be using freezers. There should be some type of accountability from management where they're like, okay, 13 hours, I don't know where my employee is.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that about?
She hasn't clocked out yet.
Yeah. I don't understand all the inner workings of the Westin. It sounds like after this, there was some changes made.
I would hope so.
Yeah. One more death, which is also unrelated to the two murders we will cover, happened just a month after Carolyn's tragic death. Stephen Akinlobi, a 10-year-old boy who was attending a birthday party at the hotel's pool, was pulled from the bottom by a guest and given CPR, then rushed to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta at Scottish Rite. Unfortunately, he did not make it and passed away at the hospital. The parents did file a lawsuit in Clayton County against the hotel in June of 2016, citing negligence on the part of the chaperones and hotel manager. It was reported that the hotel did not have any surveillance footage at the pool.
He drowned?
He drowned, yeah.
And he just didn't, maybe he didn't know how to swim or he was unsupervised or?
That's what they're saying, is that the chaperones should have done a better job of actually watching the children at this pool party.
God, that's so sad. They're just so young.
Yeah. There was no video camera up by the pool.
I'm sure after this, they probably put in a camera, right?
Put some things in place, I'm sure.
It sucks that these things have to happen in order for security measures to be taken or...
Yeah. So those three deaths are not related to the murders, but they're tragic as well. And when I was doing this research, they came up, and so I wanted to discuss those.
Yeah.
The first case we're going to discuss, which was a murder, is that of Elia Banderas. Elia was born in Mexico and came to the U.S. for work opportunities. She was 31 years old and had gotten a job at the Westin in 1995 in housekeeping. She had three young children with her boyfriend, Cesar.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I know it's not Caesar. It's Cesar.
Okay. You've like triple checked?
I've triple checked. Yeah. Cesar. And she had relatives near Atlanta that she and her children were staying with. It was the middle of the day, and Elia was simply going about her normal duties and cleaning room 6010. Guests of that room had been out for a couple of hours that morning, and when they returned to their room, they were unable to open the door because the key card wasn't working. They kept trying, and eventually the door flung open, and a man rushed out and ran down the hallway. He was a white male wearing a jacket over most of his face. They discovered Elia on the ground between the two twin beds, severely beaten with what appeared to be a telephone receiver and strangled by the telephone cord. Elia had only been here for 2 months before being brutally murdered.
Who is this person?
Well, as far as suspects, Cesar, her boyfriend, flew from California after hearing of Elia's murder. He was not considered a suspect and had an alibi with, you know, being across the country during the time the murder took place. They're not sure about a motive because nothing was taken from Elia or from the room that she was in. And she was fully clothed. There was no sexual assault. So they are unsure of the motive. They are unsure of who it was.
And there was no video footage?
There was no camera footage. I don't know when they started putting cameras up in the 90s.
But someone saw him.
Yes, the two ladies saw him.
Okay.
But he had his jacket over his face when he ran out. He pushed past them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like this was purposeful. Like, they were after her for a reason.
Maybe he did want to steal from the room, and she came in to clean it while he was trying to steal something, and so interrupted whatever he was planning on doing. But then murder, I don't know, it seems like an extreme response. Yeah. So,
and it was strangling, too.
Yes, yes.
So I wonder, obviously there was a fight.
Yeah. Maybe he was going to try and sexually assault her, but she put up a fight. A couple of weeks after Elia's murder, someone in housekeeping was working on the 64th floor and came across a linen closet that had articles of men's clothing, cigarette butts, food wrappers, and a bed made out of hotel sheets. They also found several room key cards. Various accounts of a thin white man that was around 5'7", light brownish blonde hair pulled back in a ponytail and wearing jeans and a denim jacket were given to the police. Several people did see him, not just that day of the attack, but just around the hotel. But it almost sounds like he may have been...
a guest?
I don't think he was a guest. I think he may have been somebody who was homeless because he was living in one of the linen closets, it sounds like.
They never caught him?
No. No, no, no.
So is this an unsolved murder?
This is, yeah. So that's the first murder, and there's just not much known.
Oh, that sucks.
That's the description they have. Never found the guy. And there's not much I could find on Elia's family. I think they are still in the Atlanta area somewhere. But, you know, I can't find anything about afterwards what happened, how her family's doing. There wasn't even much about her death as far as in the newspaper. It was really hard to find stuff on her.
I'm not surprised. Back in the 90s, they didn't. I think they're doing a good job now, or a better job now.
Better job, yeah.
Of trying to, like, show people of color and the media, but back in the 90s, I'm sure not.
Yeah.
Sure it wasn't like a thing. And plus, if it was at the hotel, they're not going to want that kind of publicity anyway.
Yeah. In January of 2011, Christian Boone at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported that police had reopened the case of a woman named Pauline Sarasoli, a physical therapist whose death in September of 2010 was blamed on injuries that were sustained almost 15 years earlier on February 16th, 1996.
What?
So around the time of Elia's attack.
Oh, okay.
Let me tell you about this one, because this was very close to the time when Elliot was attacked. During an attack in room 6414, not the same exact floor, but around the same place.
Yeah.
At the West in Peachtree Plaza, Pauline, 56 at the time, had been there to attend a physical therapy convention conference. She was one of two women assaulted in the hotel over a two-month period between December of 1995 and then February of 1996. So it was Elia and then Pauline. When Pauline was found in her room, she had severe head trauma from being beaten, which left her in a coma. When her family came to visit her at Grady Hospital, they said she was unrecognizable due to the facial injuries and crushed skull.
Oh my gosh.
So it was really bad. They couldn't even tell it was her. And she was beaten severely.
And nobody knows why.
No.
What?
No, it's crazy. So the doctors didn't think she would survive the evening, but she did and would wake up from the coma after several weeks. She was then moved up north to a facility near where she lived to receive care. Pauline's attack had been just as brutal as Elia's and had other similarities, such as the fact that she was not sexually assaulted either or robbed, and that she had been beaten and strangled. Both also happened during the middle of the day at the Westin. One difference with Pauline's attack was that this time the person who attacked her didn't use anything from inside the room, or whatever they did use, they took it with them. So they either brought a weapon or if they used something that was in the room, they took it with them. But like they couldn't find the weapon, the murder weapon.
Okay. So they don't know what caused those head injuries.
No, police could not find anything in the room or the surrounding areas. They did a search. That crazy.
What could be the motive, if it's not for sexual assault, if it's not for
robbery. I don't know.
Is it anger? I don't know.
It's strange, right?
Yeah. Violence?
Maybe. Pauline did not die from her injuries initially. However, she had permanent damage and needed care for the rest of her life. After waking up from the coma, she went through a lot of physical therapy and was able to speak again, but was never able to advise family or the police of who her attacker was. Pauline, who was 71, was living in New Hampshire when she passed due to complications from the initial attack she suffered. So the attack put her in a coma. She did wake up, but there was complications with the injuries she sustained that she dealt with for like 15 years, and she did eventually pass. And so it was all related to the attack that she had 15 years earlier. That's why it is considered murder.
Wow. I guess it's just a delayed.
She just survived for a very long time.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, she did pass.
Was the trauma that was done to her brain, was she able to like speak or think?
She could speak a little, but one of her relatives said that when they would ask her questions about the day of the attack and the man, she would not understand or not respond with anything related to what could have happened that day. So they could tell that either she had lost her memory of it or just wasn't able
to articulate it.
Yeah.
But was she able to speak normally regarding other things? Or was this something that
she was never like herself again, like never 100%. She needed care for the rest of her life. She was in a facility, so she was never at a point where she could care for herself and speak like she had beforehand. No.
Gosh.
So it was permanent, the damage that was done.
Like a random attack, just like
yes.
Go into a hotel for a conference.
Yeah.
You don't obviously expect something like that to happen.
No.
Random attacks, I think. Don't they say like that's so rare?
It is rare. Two cases, though, within 2 months at the same place. So there was obviously somebody, and they found the room where somebody had been living. So there was somebody staying there. I mean, it makes the most sense that it's probably the same person that did both of these attacks.
Yeah.
But as far as like who this person is.
I wondered if did they leave after this? I guess they didn't stay in that closet anymore after this attack.
Right, because this was a few weeks later they found all that. So yeah, they must have moved on from there. I just want to say about Pauline, she was a really nice person. She devoted her life to caring and mentoring in the medical profession. She was a brilliant woman. She had her master's in education from Boston University and then received a doctorate of education degree in rehabilitation administration in 1987 at Northeastern. She was very accomplished in her career, having numerous memberships in her profession, and was highly respected. She loved skiing, biking, golf, and was a Red Sox fan, and traveled the world. Aww. There is a Pauline Sarasoli Lectureship Award that was created in her honor by a group of her friends and colleagues to recognize her commitment and contributions to the profession. And on the American Physical Therapy Association's website, it says, recipients of the lectureship have distinguished themselves, as Sarasoli did, as esteemed educators, administrators, practitioners, and mentors. Sarasoli's family directed that proceeds from the Pauline Sarasoli Fund, originally created to support the family, be used instead to fund the annual lecture. There's at least some way that they were able to
honor her.
Yeah, after this horrific event happened and eventually took her life.
Yeah, she'll always be remembered for, like, her accomplishments.
Yeah.
And, you know, so her name will constantly be remembered.
Right. And I wish there was more information about Elia so we could talk about her too, but I just couldn't find anything. I really couldn't. And even the Fall Line covers her case. She does mention it too, that, you know, there wasn't a lot about her. And that's sad that we can't say more about what she was like.
Yeah.
But she was obviously a hardworking person. The service industry and hospitality, that's not easy.
No, it's definitely not. Like you said, she was a hard worker. She seemed like a kind person.
Yeah. But and so I hope her kids are doing wonderful. Like I said, I couldn't find anything about it.
It sucks. Yeah, it sucks when you can't really find a lot about the victims.
Yeah.
Because you want to be able to talk about them and, like, share what kind of people they were.
Yeah,
kind of
their interests. Exactly.
Yeah. Outside of the horrible thing that happened to them.
Yes. You know, I started to tell you about the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It was an article by Christian Boone.
Yeah, and they reopened her case.
Uh-huh, in 2011. So at that time, a spokesperson for the Atlanta police, Curtis Davenport, told Mr. Boone that the two deaths did have similar MOs, but they were unsure if they were related. So let's talk about suspects. Shortly after the attacks, Sonny James Hamilton, a 23-year-old construction worker from Rock Hill, South Carolina, was questioned when he resembled a computer composite made of the suspect in the murder of Elia. He had a battery charge in connection with a 1993 incident at the Westin. Mm. According to police records, Hamilton chased two female guests and then shut off the power to 10 elevators at the hotel.
What?
Yeah.
So erratic.
And I guess he spent some time in a Fulton County jail after he turned himself in. It was on a warrant for violating probation in that case. But while he was in custody, he submitted to a polygraph test, which he claims to have passed, and gave Atlanta police samples of his hair and blood for comparisons with the evidence they seized from the attacks at the Westin. Although Hamilton claims a detective told him that he had passed everything with flying colors, Atlanta police chief at that time, Beverly Harvard, told the reporter that Hamilton had not been ruled out as a suspect. In March of 1996, he was released. There was no word at that time on whether or not they planned to question Hamilton again with Pauline's case being reopened. They did have DNA from the blood of the male at the scene in Elia's case and a chunk of his hair.
Oh.
Elia put up a fight and she tore out a chunk of his hair.
That's great that she was able to, like, leave his DNA there.
Yeah.
Has it linked up with anything?
Nothing yet. So the brown hair that had been ripped out by Elia during the attack did not appear to match Hamilton's. It sounds like he may not be a suspect any longer in her death. And they didn't mention anything about Pauline's. So Crime Rewind with Jen Marie covers this case and she goes to the Westin Hotel. You can find her episode on YouTube. She actually stayed in the room where Elia was murdered, which I don't know if I could do, but she stated there was no paranormal activity because I know you're going to ask if there was paranormal activity. She said there was no paranormal activity the night she stayed there. She also goes into the location of the two stairwells near the rooms.
Like in between, in the room. Like both of their floors?
Yeah, and with Elia's, she goes in the video from the room and she shows how near the room is to a stairwell. It would have been easy for the person to escape. Also, it's not like somebody ran down a straight hall and those women could have looked for a long time at him. It was a curved hallway, so he would have ran out and went right around a curved hallway.
They weren't able to get like a good look at him.
Yeah. And one of the stairwells like went right out onto a street. And then the other staircase would take you out to International Boulevard. So it's a street like right outside. Either way, like whoever did this could have easily escaped quickly too.
Yeah. And if it's the same person, then they probably know like the ins and outs.
Right. And if they were staying in the hotel in that room, you probably know the
like
routines.
Illegally,
yes. Yeah. If you're squatting in the Westin, yeah, you probably know the schedule of housekeeping. So when they're coming and going, when people, because people usually at a hotel, if there's conferences and stuff, they're all leaving around the same time. Maybe that's when this person would go and rifle through the rooms. Who knows?
Yeah, but then you'd think there'd be some sign of robbery or something taken.
But nothing was.
But if it's someone who's just living there, I wonder, do you think maybe they were just like taking toiletries, like towels?
Could be, but then you're going to murder somebody because they interrupted you trying to grab some toilet paper? I don't know. That seems really extreme.
Maybe. Unless it's a very like unstable person. And violent.
Yeah. Maybe. It just seems like these women were murdered so brutally.
It does seem like there was some kind of like personal aspect to it.
Like they weren't related. There's really nothing to link these two women together. Wouldn't be somebody that knew them both. It really sounds like it could just be a really random crime.
But possibly done by the same person.
It sounds like it.
Is it still open? Are these cases still open?
I think Sarah Soli's is still, well, it was reopened. So I don't know if it's still open now, but it sounds like in 2011 it was reopened.
Okay. Okay, so we don't know if they're still, like, actually looking for anybody in this case.
We don't know. But if you know anything, contact Atlanta PD. Yeah. Let them know. Solve these cases. If you were there around that time, in 95 or 96, and you remember seeing a man with brownish hair, kind of, they said some blonde, like, highlights.
But no, like, age range approximate?
Early 30s, but maybe mid-20s to early 30s.
Okay.
White male.
Probably
in
their 50s or 60s now. If they're still alive.
Ugh.
It sucks. It really sucks. Like, these random encounters.
Yeah. And so he must not have committed any more crimes because his DNA isn't in the system.
That's true. Yeah.
Would somebody just commit two horrific crimes and then just stop killing?
I mean, if they're not a serial killer, like, if it's just, like, random instances... You know,
they're both just
a lot to
really,
go off
I know,
of. Yeah.
It's really two strange cases. Well, all the deaths that have happened and the murders in the Westin are strange.
Agreed.
But they really have no clue who this man is. Like, there's just no leads. There's nothing.
Yeah. But I guess it's been some time since then. There haven't been any other murders there.
No, those are the only two murders. And this was 95 and 96.
Okay.
So the Westin obviously has, I'm sure, upped their security, their cameras, things like that.
Yeah. You have to in Atlanta.
Yeah. And this is not like the only place where murders have happened in a hotel, but it's just very odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah. The unsolved ones always get you because you just don't really know what to think.
Yeah. And then there's no motive that you can readily see. So it's like, why? Why would this happen?
Yeah. Man, I can't believe she survived for 15 years. I've never heard of that. That's something I've learned from this, is that even if, like, you pass away, like, you're surviving these wounds for so long, but eventually if those cause your death, then...
It's murder.
It's still considered murder.
Yep.
Wow. You're always teaching us things, aren't you?
No. Am I?
I feel like I always learn something in your episodes. Like,
do
like,
you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm happy
like,
to
I didn't
help.
Know that heroin. I didn't know the heroin thing.
The heroin thing?
When we talked in the Dr. Death episode about...
Oh, yeah.
Like how there's basically
like
medical...
medical-grade heroin?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, keep it up.
I will try and educate you in every episode.
Thank you.
It's my new goal.
So, I don't want to commit to reading a whole book. So I'm going
to
say...
No, you have to read the whole book, because I have to read a book too.
Well, yes.
We could both have a bookcase, and then we'll be here for 5 hours recording the next time.
I know.
Because anytime we do a book, it's always a longer episode.
It's always... Well, usually when we have books, they're usually two-parters.
Oh, yeah. We'll be here for 5 hours for sure.
Right. But you're covering a local case if you do read the book.
Again, I know. Maybe I need to branch out. But these cases around Atlanta, they get me hooked.
I know. It's like the opposite for me. I think the paranormal book that I have is in Canada.
Oh, yeah. The one that still may not convince me, but you're going to try, right?
Always going to try. Because if I believe it, I have to try.
One thing we want to do when we get the podcast room done is have a map and put little pins on all the countries that we've covered a case.
Yeah. And they'll be like color coordinated, like if it's like a true crime or
paranormal.
It'll be cool to see. I know we've branched out to many different places. So
yeah, we have.
Once we get the podcast room, we'll have to put a picture after we've put all of our pins in to see like.
Yeah. I know we've done a lot of California cases. We've done a ton of Georgia cases. And then we've done some outside the country too.
Yes.
Well, so your next one may be Canada.
Maybe Canada.
Okay.
Canada. But if not, then like it's I'm still learning how to manage my schedule. So
do you have another backup?
There's always backups. I have a whole list of backups.
Yeah, I do too. So I'm going to try and cover a cold case. I'm sorry, not a cold case. I'm going to try and cover Barbara Mackle. So there's a book called 83 Hours.
Is that the one that Gary?
Yes, it's the one that Gary recommended to us.
Shout out, Gary.
It's a very interesting one. It's called 83 Hours Till Dawn. That's what it is. But it was published in 71. It had good reviews on Amazon. They couldn't put it down. It's a survivor story.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. We don't have many of those, so always love to hear about a survivor story.
Yeah, and she was kidnapped into DeKalb County and buried alive in Gwinnett County.
And we're very familiar with both of those places.
I thought you were going to say very familiar with being buried alive. No. Well, no, we're not.
No.
But we are very familiar with both of those counties.
Yeah, so I'm sure we'll
be familiar with the streets and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting. So follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, until it's banned. It's banned in Montana now.
I know. I'm still trying to figure out what happens if you get TikTok in Montana. Do they arrest you or?
Oh, they arrest you for sure.
Oh.
No, I have no idea. They fine you. I don't even know how they're going to keep up with that.
Yeah. And hold people accountable. How can you like hold that?
I don't know.
And then send us some suggestions if you have any at freshlybrewednoir@gmail.com.
And until next time.
Stay caffeinated.
Get hobbies.
And don't murder people.
Bye.
Bye.